Celebrate 76 WFIL.
And welcome back to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for September 1997. I'm Fred Bobby here in the studios, and I'd like to make mention that we're going to be having a survey sent to you in the very near future. All our DX Audio Service members who have been with us for the last 6 months and beyond are going to be receiving a survey, which is going to basically ask some hard questions. The purpose of this survey is to see what the future of the DX Audio Service holds. Do you have any likes, dislikes, things you think we should be covering, or perhaps things that you don't like at all on the service? Well, make them known to us. Your comments are going to be very important to us, as they will drive what happens in the future of the DX Audio Service. So if you're looking for changes and things in the future, be sure to fill it out, because that will dictate what 1998 and beyond does here on this magazine. And if you have been with us for a few years and filled out our last questionnaire, you will notice that we did make some changes. So it is very important for you to take that seriously and send it back to us when you receive it. Speaking of changes, Kennard gets some Clinton thumbs up as President Clinton last week made it official that he's choosing FCC General Counsel William Kennard as the next FCC chairman. Sources say the nominees for all the positions available in the Federal Communications Commission could come up before senators with the confirmation hearings in September. Kennard is expected to encounter resistance from Senator Ernest Hollings, a Democrat from South Carolina, who has been pushing the administration to name his former aide, Washington lawyer Ralph Everett, as chairman of the commission. Well, let's nominate somebody here to the post of Market Scope. DX Audio Service members and senators, I'd like to nominate the gentleman from Findlay, Ohio, the Right Reverend Philip Wayne. 93KSJ.
Hello, DXers, radio buffs, and conventioners. Phil Wayne here from Market Scope, a monthly tune-in to radio markets worldwide. This time, Mark Marino has been working overtime to bring us a small market heavily in the shadow of the nation's number three radio market. Mark, what's the scoop?
Hello, friends. When I first thought of doing a scope of the following market, I wasn't sure if it had that much potential. It used to only have two radio stations. But in the past 10 years, the area has grown, and it's also grown with its radio stations. And it has some unique features. First of all, it has 6 stations, but that means 1 AM and 5 FM. Let's hear first from its only AM station at 1320. It's been around now for 50 years.
WKAN. Let's play Cash Carousel here on WKAN. There's $114 in the Cash Carousel jackpot. And Cash Carousel this time around is sponsored by Premium Specialties. Premium Specialties is the sponsor this time around. Take caller number 5 right now at 935-1320. Good luck.
You don't have to be a mountain climber to own your own business. Premium Specialties on McMullen Drive, just south of the dam in Kankakee. Promoting your business is their business.
And say hello to our fifth caller. It's Peggy of Bourbon. Hey, Peggy, how are you this morning? How about that pregnant mom story, huh? Robbing the bank.
Don't even talk pregnant.
Oh, man. Because, I mean, you would think maybe it was just a case of hormones, you know, that she was going to, you know, point the gun at the tellers and everything like that. But,
but
is right. Okay, who are you going to pick for the Cash Carousel jackpot?
I'm going to try the Majestic Star.
Okay, Majestic Star Casino for $114. Here we go.
Frank's Appliance Center.
Peggy, it came up Frank's Appliance Center for you. Thanks a lot for playing. Bye-bye. Cash Carousel goes up to $118 for the next time around. Let's flash back right now on 1320 WKAN.
Flashback. July 9th, 1956.
WKAN does not use a satellite service, and they thrive on their music, news, features, and agricultural information.
I'm David Valenti with Flashback.
The first FM in the market is owned by Olivet Nazarene University, and they're doing their best to sound like a community-oriented, full-service radio station.
Twyla Paris, Jesus in You. Today's Christian Radio, 89.7 WONU. We've got more phony baloney coming up soon with Bill, Beth, and Carl.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock. I'm Carl Fletcher with the morning news, and it's brought to you by Taylor Chrysler Plymouth Dodge. We have sunshine. Going to be a hot day. Going up to 95. Starting off the morning, 75. The space shuttle Columbia has landed safely this morning.
815-935-7900.
Chicagoland.
More sunshine than you'll know what to do with, and more heat than you'll know what to do with, for sure. The humidity is back today. 95 is going to be our high temperature. It's 76 right now as you're starting off the morning with sunshine. On the tri-state southbound at Everett, there's a semi in the ditch. Crews will have to block all the lanes later when they pull it out of there. But for now, they're going to leave it in there. That's a look at traffic and weather. 89.7 WONU Kankakee.
Come and listen to my story about a man named Job. A righteous man and the richest on the globe. Then one day, just to test Job's faith, God allowed Satan to take it all away. Flocks, that is, all his servants, his children too. Well, the next thing you know, Job was tempted to deny. Kinfolk said, Job, curse God and die. Said, only sinners get this kind of grief. But he stood fast and he held on to his belief. The Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Now it's time to say goodbye to Job and all his pain. Even all that trouble wouldn't make him curse God's name. And then the Lord gave him more children for posterity. And then a heaping helping of his old prosperity. Riches, that is. God is faithful. Whatever happens, y'all praise God now. Here?
It's 8:05. We have more phony baloney with Bill, Beth, and Carl in just a few minutes.
We're talking about today's Christian radio.
And I just started listening to the radio station in the last couple of months. I love it.
89.7 WONU.
So don't know it's been your time.
The Kankakee County Fairgrounds offers events and shows throughout the year. If you'd like to know what's happening this month at the Kankakee County Fairgrounds, you may reach them at 815-932-6714. You may also call the Kankakee County Convention and Visitors Bureau at 874-RIVER.
This is Kankakee's FM Travelers Information Station at 91.1.
Stay tuned to WTKC for information on restaurants, hotels, and service stations throughout Kankakee County on WTKC 91.1 FM. The Kankakee County Visitor Center is open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. for visitors and locals who are looking for information on events, activities, and attractions in the area. The Visitor Center holds 200 free brochures to browse through. Kankakee County brochures, as well as brochures from all over Illinois, are available. The Visitor Center is located off of Interstate 57 at exit 315 on Route 50 North. For more information, call 874-RIVER.
Staying in a hotel can be fun for the entire family. Hi, I'm Steve Wilder with a WTKC tourism safety tip. After checking into your room, make sure the locks on the doors and windows are working properly, and keep them locked at all times. Know how to get to the emergency exits from your room, and know the emergency phone numbers for local police, fire, and ambulance services. Finally, don't open the door to strangers. If you are in doubt about someone at your door, alert hotel security immediately. Do not open the door. While away from your room, secure all valuables in the hotel safe. If no safe is provided by the hotel, check with management to secure other arrangements. Leave your room lights on and keep the curtains drawn. Take personal papers, documents, or other personal identifiers with you. Never leave your personal keys in the room when you leave. Finally, make sure the doors are locked behind you. I'm Steve Wilder of Sorensen Wilder & Associates in Bradley with a WTKC tourism safety tip.
WTKC's Tourism Safety Tip is brought to you by Sorensen Wilder & Associates.
Kankakee has an automated country station on FM at 92.7. It also belongs to WKAN.
Haven't seen you in a while. How you been?
They're pretty laid back. They do have a disc jockey in the morning and one of the weather services.
Mid-80s, I'm meteorologist Alan Archer.
59 degrees downtown. Good morning. It is 1.5 minutes past 7, and this is your home for America's music. It is WLRT.
92.7 WLRT. Northfield Square Mall, Route 50, I-57, exit 315, Bradley, Illinois, a Simon-managed property.
Unlike that breakfast sausage, we're not full of fillers. 100% pure country here on T93. And it's time now to take a little trip on the train. The city of New Orleans, Willie Nelson.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
The next station is also relatively new. It signed on about 7 years ago, but it didn't settle into a format until a couple of years ago. It's playing oldies, and it has quite a variety in its playlist.
I'm WVLI's staff meteorologist, Jeff Smith.
WVLI. 5 minutes before 8 o'clock, 58 degrees in the valley, 95.1 FM, WVLI.
Lollipop, lollipop, oh, lolly, lolly,
lolly. Sue Thompson, Norm, in the valley, Norman, I guess, more precise. WVLI Kankakee News with Ken, brought to you by Miltos Mosk Andrew, MD, in the Med Center. Across from St. Mary's Hospital in Kankakee, call 933-6515.
Good morning. Currently 59 degrees in the valley, up to 76 this afternoon with sunshine later on today. Got quite a few clouds out there right now, but they are leaving the area. Topping the news at this hour, those campaign fundraising hearings continue in Washington today. The woman accused of trying to extort $40 million from Bill Cosby. Her trial begins today. Tyson hearings today, and we'll hear more from Outrage. All that coming up.
And now, the top 10 reasons for visiting the offices of Dr. Miltos Mosk Andrew to clear unwanted wrinkles with laser surgery.
Coming up on 8:06, and I'm Ken Zier for WVLI.
Mr. Ray, this is Ray, ball of fire.
Say hello.
Hello. Nobody, and we mean nobody, gives away more cash and prizes than the Valley. We've recently given away over $10,000 in cash and prizes. And here comes more.
You know you want it. You sweat, but you don't dare move. You want it right now.
This is a story of here and now.
Something new is knocking at the door.
It isn't the quiz show, but it sounds like the answer to some mighty important questions.
The Valley wants to line your pockets with thousands more. All you got to do is listen to 95.1 for the details, and you could be a winner.
Oh, my. Oh, shoot.
We love that guy. We love you. We'll be giving away thousands all summer long. All you got to do is listen.
Just listen. The radio station America listens to.
On the lake, in the river, or on the go, we'll be everywhere you want to be this summer in the valley. 95.1 WVLI.
Our last station used to be a big station in Kankakee. In fact, it had the call letters WBYG in the late 70s and early 80s. Before that, it was known as WKAK under a country format. And after that, WBSW and WBUS as a hit music station called The Bus. Now it simulcasts with the station at 103.9, and it has a Spanish format.
Sintonizas la Z. Yolanda y su pijamada. Ahora une corazones y hasta hace que se te caiga de emoción hasta los calcetines. Dicen que se va de viaje en crucero. A ver quién se va con ella. El que reserve primero. La Z.
El crucero del.
Incidentally, its frequency is 99.9.
Ok, ¿estás listo? Cuando yo te diga corre, tú vas a poder parar cuando tú quieras, ¿ok?
Ok.
Dale, vale, vámonos, ¿sí? Escuchen, muchachas, ¿cómo los artistas van a jugar usted con ustedes también? Sale, vale, vámonos rápidamente. A ver qué persona va a ser la afortunada de jugar con César de los Dinosaurios. Sale, bien. Vámonos. Tiempo y... Ay, espérate. Vamos a poner la canción, ¿no, César? ¿No, César? Ponemos la botella, ¿no? Todo.
Órale.
Todo formalito, ¿eh?
Órale.
¡Ahí voy! Ahí voy, ahí voy. Ahorita voy a... ¿Me permites cantar contigo? Ni tengo ni 8, ni 7, ni
6. Claro, okay. Ya lo hiciste una vez, ¿no?
Híjole, pero ya ni digas.
I don't know what they're saying, but it sounds like they're having a good time. And that's it. For this time, I'm Mark Marino for the DX Audio Service.
Thank you, Mark. That's your September Market Scope. I'd like to remind everyone that I welcome all contributions to Market Scope with open arms. You can contact me, Phil Wayne, at 135 and a half Midland Avenue, Findlay, Ohio, 45840-4642. As I leave you, the DX Audio Service is proud to feature a gentleman with a wealth of radio knowledge and a most cheerful and positive disposition, our mutual friend, John Bowker.
Well, thanks, Phil. And now, Historical Moments in Radio, a collection of stories about the development of broadcasting on the AM radio dial. And today I want to relate some of the early experiences in broadcasting of Mr. Sylvester Pat Weaver. He was later to become president of NBC and chairman of the NBC board, the inventor of the Today Show and later the Tonight Show concepts. But as with most TV executives of the 1950s and 60s, Pat Weaver got his start in radio. Now, there are some fun stories he tells in his book, The Best Seat in the House. It was published by the Alfred Knopf Publishing House in 1994. In part, Mr. Weaver writes, "General Sarnoff disliked me. That made things tough at times because he was my boss at NBC, and I had helped with the introduction and development of many innovative NBC shows for many years that made a lot of dollars for NBC. I helped make millions of dollars, in fact. And I resigned one morning in 1956. But my career in broadcasting began in 1932 with the Don Lee CBS Regional Network in California. Now, radio was very stilted in those days, very formal. The announcers often dressed in tuxedos, scripts were checked and double-checked and then cleared for broadcast by the executives. Each of the big network shows, though, originated in New York City. There were several NBC studios in New York. The 70-story RCA building at 30 Rockefeller Plaza was under construction, and it, of course, would later house all the NBC and RCA executive offices in the city. But at that time on the West Coast, where I was, writes Pat Weaver, the entire CBS West Coast operation consisted of 100 people at the KHJ studios in Los Angeles. Oh, incidentally, our arch rival was NBC, the KFI station across town that was owned by the largest Packard motor car dealer in California. But you see, Don Lee was a Cadillac dealer, so you never saw a Packard automobile in the CBS parking lot. CBS was only able to feed us a few hours of programs each day, so much of our broadcast day was locally originated. I, for instance, was hired as a comedy writer, but during that first year I was a staff announcer, a producer, a director, an actor, a sound effects man, a reporter, and sometimes I even went out and sold time to clients in the Los Angeles area. I took my turn at running the copy machine, handing a hectograph sheet to an actor who was on the air ad-libbing until the next page of script came through the machine. Well, it was very inventive radio in those days, perhaps not unlike experiences in smaller market radio even many years later. But this was CBS, and this was Los Angeles, California. Well, one day, the manager of the Flying Red Horse Gasoline Company came into me and asked if KHJ could do something big. And he meant big. Bigger than anything Los Angeles radio had ever done. He wanted to sponsor it for his company. And I said, sure. Buy out the entire broadcasting day of KHJ. We'll have commercials for you many times each hour for 18 hours that day. And, you know, it worked. They were happy with the promotion. I came away with a bit disappointed, though. You see, I had originally proposed that we broadcast that whole day from a dirigible floating high over the city of Los Angeles with an enormous flying red horse painted on the sides. They thought about it. One of their vice presidents rejected the idea when he spotted the call letters KHJ neatly emblazoned across the horse's belly. Well, I tried. I broadcast the news on some days. Actually, March 10th, 1933 was the biggest news day of my entire tenure at KHJ. And that was my day off, of course. But I came in after feeling the earth sway under my couch at home. I had been through other earthquakes, but this one seemed a bit stronger than the others. And was I right? That earthquake killed 120 people in Long Beach and Compton, California. I worked through the night with Jack Van Nostrand on that story. We hadn't slept, of course, since the night before that. And we were just leaving around 5 a.m. The phone rang. It was New York City, CBS, wanting a one-hour earthquake story for the network. The program was to begin in less than an hour at New York's 9 a.m. And we made it. It apparently went well because that became part of my resume years later. Well, that's just one of the excerpts from Pat Weaver's book, and there's a lot more to come. We want to tell you about it, but the rest is history. For Historical Moments, this is John Bowker.
Musings from Members by Phone.
The DX Audio Service Musings from Members. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the views of the DX Audio Service, the National Radio Club, the editors, or publishers.
If you're DXAS subscribed, you can call our comment line at 419-224-1609.
You have 45 seconds.
Audio Service Members, this is John Sanders. I have a question. Do you do tours to your facility?
Hi, this is Pat Cassidy calling from Newcastle, Delaware. I have a couple of comments this time. First of all, I think that when a station in any market decides to cover a baseball team, for example, the Baltimore Orioles are not covered in the Wilmington market, but a station, Newark, WNRK, they carry the Orioles, but at night they're down to 42 watts, and you can hardly hear them anywhere outside of Newark. My point is, I think that stations who are going to carry a baseball or any kind of sports team should be able to be picked up in the entire market region. I don't think that station with 42 watts that doesn't cover an area should be allowed to carry any team like that. And also, another thing, I think the network stations, if they're going to be part of that network, they should carry the sports as well as the news programs from that network. For example, WILM does not do that. They carry no more CBS sports, and I think that if they're not going to carry the sports, they shouldn't be carrying any CBS programming. Thank you. Enjoy the magazine very much.
Hi, Mike Dukin calling on Sunday evening, August the 3rd. And here's something that I didn't hear mentioned on AM Switch, but I was listening to Glenn Hauser's World of Radio a few weeks ago, and he said that there's a couple of Kansas City radio stations that might be swapping frequencies. Apparently, WHB on 710 will possibly be moving down to 810 where KCMO is, and KCMO will be moving down to 710 where WHB is. Has anybody heard about that? And also, Fred was reading Al Merriman's column about collecting QSLs from Radio London. Well, I guess there is a 2-CD set about the history of Radio London and offshore pirate stations. This is a question for Fred. I'm wondering if there might be a possibility that the publication center might be able to obtain these so that we as audio service members can purchase them.
Hey there, DXers. This is Josh Owens from Brown Summit, North Carolina, reporting a format change on August 6th. 1170 WCXN in Claremont, North Carolina, near Charlotte, from being a bluegrass gospel station for many, many years has now gone Spanish as of this past Monday. That's all I have. 7-3 and good DX.
This is Leonard Gross from Detroit, and I have about two or three changes to report. 560 AM was purchased by Crawford Broadcasting and is now known as the WMUZ Word Station to 1340 WEXL was also purchased by WMUZ or the Crawford Broadcasting Company, and they have changed to an all gospel format. Also, WDFN, the all sports station, has increased their power. And those are the two changes that I want to report. Also, one other thing, and that is that in October 1310, which is now WDOZ, has been purchased by some people that used to work for WJR, and they are supposed to change format in October.
Greetings, audio service members. This is John Sanders. 92.7 has changed call letters. They're now WVIC, and 94.9 is still WMMQ. So we do it.
Greetings, audio service members. Marty Rimpaugh here on the 18th of August. A myriad of items. First, the passing of a legend in Los Angeles, the real Don Steele. If you hadn't heard by now, he passed away on August 5th of lung cancer, and we're sure going to miss the L.A. legend that was the real Don Steele. Now, 1220 KDFC changed to Personal Motivation Radio on the 13th of August, and I understand that 910 KNEW has given their air staff 30 days notice, so I wonder if they'll go real country satellite. And I guess that's all. So happy DX.
And I thought I'd give some comments to our musings to the members line. First of all, when you call up with station information, be sure to give the name of the market, because sometimes us old folk just don't recognize those call signs and where they belong. I think John was talking about the Lansing, Michigan market, as that's where the call sign WVIC and MMQ last resided. But be sure to give your market information and let us know where those stations are located. Also, we had two callers on the audio service action line who did not identify them. And as you may or may not know, we have a strict policy against putting non-DX audio service members on our musings line. So unless you identify yourself and I don't recognize the voice, they don't make the audio service. I have to agree with the comments made about Real Don Steele. I hope that Robert W. Morgan does a lot better with his fight. And I have to say, as a old top 40 disc jockey from the 70s, Don Steele was a guy that we all tried to emulate and all looked up to. He was kind of a benchmark in the broadcasting business as far as top 40 radio was concerned. Don was a prize fighter of sorts. He always came out swinging. He was always prepped for his show. You never heard a bad Real Don Steele show, and he will be sadly missed. On the subject of tours, I don't know if a tour could really be constituted, because let me explain a little bit about how we do the magazine, the technical side. I don't know if we've really addressed this in the past. But when I purchased this property down here in Lima, Ohio, basically, this is a residence with a studio and office built in the rear of the house. It started out back in 1985 here in Lima. We started the magazine actually in Westland, Michigan in April of 1985, and I moved to Lima in June of 1985. But the house here in Lima had a garage, which you had to drive straight back and then make a really super tight 90-degree right turn to get into this garage. It was basically worthless, because if you had a car any larger than a Volkswagen Beetle, usually ended up taking out a corner of the wall. So with that in mind, I built a new garage, which was located behind the house in the yard, and took this and converted it into a studio. Now, to give you an idea of how this is all laid out, imagine a room which is about 24 feet long, about 14 feet wide, and has 10-foot ceilings. First thing I did was I completely insulated all the walls, so no sound from the outside can come into the studio area. And basically, the kids can be creating a holy war outside in the yard, and you don't hear them on the microphone. Occasionally, you will hear some background noise as I will open up the windows of the doors just to get in some fresh air, and that's when you hear the birds chirp and other noises. But it's pretty soundproof in here, and there's several panels of Sonics soundproofing to keep the echo down, because I do record a lot of different voice tracks in here, as well as some music stuff from time to time. As far as what is on the walls and located here in the room, on one wall, nothing but tapes. I think at last count I had something like 2,700 reels of tape, which over the next few years are going to be going bye-bye because just recently we purchased a recordable CD-ROM system, and a lot of the material which is presently on open reel tape is going to be changed over to either CD-ROM or DAT tape. I think a lot of people would not be necessarily that impressed if they came into the studio and looked at it, other than the fact that it looks like a production studio in the back of a house. How about that? Here's a guy I think I'm real impressed with. His sports knowledge is second to none. And you got to meet this guy at the convention. He is really a source of information. Here's Ken Onischuk.
And Ken Onischuk back here in the sports department on the DX Audio Service for the August 97 edition. And I currently have the 1997 National Football League flagship radio outlets and backup stations when necessary for you. So let me get into this right away without any delay. The world champion, Super Bowl champion, Green Bay Packers, back on 620 WTMJ radio. And a backup for the Milwaukee Brewers will be 1250 WEMP. After many years, the Chicago Bears have left 720 WGN and will now be on 670 WMAQ this year and who knows how far on. The Minnesota Vikings will be on 830 WCCO, and in case of a conflict with the Twins most likely will move to 102.1 KEEY. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are one of several NFL teams that have moved to FM stations to attract the younger listeners. Tampa Bay this year will be on 99.5 WQYK out of St. Petersburg. The Detroit Lions are back on 1270 WXYT. The Dallas Cowboys in English this year have moved from KVIL-FM over to Talk Radio 1190, KOOO. At least that's the last calls I've heard, although they've had some other calls recently, but they're currently KOOO. Next, WJFK Radio will be carrying two teams this year. That's right, I think the first time ever. AM 1300 will be carrying the Baltimore Ravens, and 106.7 will be carrying the Washington Redskins this year. Next, the New York Giants have moved from WOR Radio New York over to WNEW-FM 102.7. The Philadelphia Eagles have remained on FM 94.1 WYSP. The Arizona Cardinals out of Phoenix have moved from KESE-FM to KHTC 96.9. The Atlanta Falcons are back this year on 92.9 WZGC. And the Carolina Panthers are also back on 1110 WBT. The New Orleans Saints are back this year with an 870 WWL. There was some publicity in the papers that a Chicago station would carry the Saints games here because of the tremendous respect to Coach Mike Ditka, but as of early August, there's been no more mention of it. The St. Louis Rams are back on 550 with different calls, KTRS this time. San Francisco 49ers back on 810 KGO. The Cincinnati Bengals have moved from WCKY AM to WBLB 1160 AM, licensed to Florence, Kentucky, and 105.1 WBE out of Cincinnati. The Houston Oilers have moved to Tennessee. This year they'll be in Memphis. Next year they'll be in Nashville. So for this year in Memphis, they'll play at the Liberty Bowl and be heard on 104.5 WRVR. The Jacksonville Jaguars are back on 690 WOKV. The Pittsburgh Steelers on 1250 WTAE. The Buffalo Bills on 930 WBEN. The Indianapolis Colts on 1070 WIBC and 93.1 WNAP. The Miami Dolphins have switched stations from WIOD-AM to 560 WQAM Sports Radio. The New England Patriots, playing out of Foxborough, Massachusetts, are back on 104.1 WBCN. The New Jersey Jets will be on 660 WFAN. Conflict with the Mets, you'll have to search the dial a little bit. The Denver Broncos will be back on 850 KOA. And in conflicts with the Rockies, they'll probably move to 950 KKFN. The Kansas City Chiefs are back on 101.1 KCFX, Harrisonville, Missouri. The Oakland Raiders have moved back from FM to AM this time, from KYCY-FM over to KTCT, The Ticket, AM 1050 in suburban San Mateo. The San Diego Chargers are back on 690 XTRA. And the Seattle Seahawks are back on 710 KIRO and a conflict with the Mariners. Move to 950 KJR, one of the two teams at least. And now to wrap up this report, a little bit of arena football what I've got. We had the Albany Firebirds out there unavailable. The Anaheim Piranhas were not on radio. Arizona out of Phoenix was one of the teams. We have the City Hawks. Not sure of the city, but it was just listed 930 WPAT and WBIS television. New Jersey Red Dogs were on 9:30 a.m. and 12:50 a.m. The Florida team was on Sun Cable. The Iowa Born Stormers were on a network on 10:40, 12:70, 15:70, 12:20, and 15:60 and 5 FM stations. Wow. The Milwaukee Mustangs were heard on 1290 WMCS. The Nashville Cats on 1010, 1290, and 1380. The New Jersey team, which I couldn't get a nickname, 930 WPAT. The Portland Forest Dragons weren't mentioned in the newspaper even in town. The Orlando Predators on 740 WWNZ. The San Jose Clash had no radio coverage. The Tampa Bay Storm on 820 WZTM and 1550 WAMA. The Texas team had no radio. And to finish up here, the soccer team, the Dallas Burn, on 1190 KOOO and 1270 AM in Spanish. And I also have the Milwaukee Rampages, no radio there listed. So I'm looking forward to seeing you all at the convention coming up in a month. I'm going to get there one way or the other. And other than that, that's current information for now. And we'll see you in September. Bye-bye.
Several times a year, I receive questions from our DX Audio Service listeners about enforcement issues, legal precedents, and different points of law dealing with the FCC. And you even heard some of those comments here on the Musings to the Members. In the August 11th, 1997 edition of Broadcasting and Cable Magazine, they had an article entitled Complaint Department. And let me read this to you. Here's what most people think when they think of the Federal Communications Commission. Fed up with those loud television commercials? Offended by Howard Stern? Mad at the liberal media? Your complaint to the FCC will end up at the Mass Media's Bureau of Enforcement Division, where Chuck Kelly has presided as chief for more than a decade. I get to have the job that most people think the FCC does on a full-time basis, says Kelly, pointing to the popular perception of the FCC as the cops of television and radio. It turns out that's what we do. Kelly's division handles the calls and the letters that flood the commission each year. He estimates that the division takes about 20,000 calls from irate viewers and listeners each year and gets many letters. Somebody's got to read them, he says. If we can, we try to answer them. In many cases, no answer is required. Kelly says that many viewers write the FCC simply to vent their frustrations with a show. In other cases, the commission sends out a pre-printed response explaining the FCC's policies. Even in this day and age, we get a lot of people complaining about loud commercials, Kelly says. He remembers a commission effort to regulate the volume of commercials. Officials abandoned that initiative after finding it too subjective. Other calls come from reporters looking to check up on the practices of local stations. Kelly says newspaper reporters especially like to phone in reports on local stations and ask whether the broadcasters are crossing any lines. There's a lot of whistleblowing. He remembers one case in which the division received calls about a pair of San Francisco disc jockeys who, in an effort to simulate a airport tie-up caused by President Clinton's airplane, created their own traffic jam along the San Francisco Bridge. The media was on us. They thought, "What are you going to do to them?" Kelly recalls. The trick in that case was, without appearing like a do-nothing bureaucracy, to explain that the traffic jam was a job for local police. Kelly has more such stories about listeners asking the FCC to respond to on-air comments and annex. Periodically, officials get calls about threats against public officials, such as the local mayor being made on the air. Kelly likes to tell callers that the FCC probably is not the arm of government that they want protecting their mayor. "If this is a serious threat, we call the cops," Kelly says. "Don't come telling us about how maybe 5 years down the road we could take this guy's license away. Taking away a station's license is something the commission almost never does. Fines are more common, but still rare in comparison to the number of complaints." Kelly prefers to head off problems by talking with broadcasters and explaining the rules before a complaint arrives. Believe it or not, imposing fines or taking negative action against broadcasters is not something we enjoy doing, he says. He cites the reduction in the number of equal employment opportunity fines his department is handing out. And on the political advertising front, last year's election so far has yielded few, if any, complaints about the FCC's lowest unit charge rules, Kelly says. Lately, he adds, the division has been getting more complaints from broadcasters about pirate radio stations. The types of pirate stations ranging from college students spinning a few records to semi-professional operations running commercials. In some cases, they're out there actually selling time on a station that doesn't have a license in the first place, Kelly says. The enforcement division chief has been dealing with such issues since before even there was a mass media bureau. Kelly recalls joining the commission in 1965 because the government was the only potential employer not asking about his draft status. The federal government was a great place for someone who didn't have a deferment, he says. Kelly eventually was deferred because of his poor eyesight. To others at the FCC, the 30-plus years of FCC service has made Kelly a walking encyclopedia of commission history. He is truly a institutional memory of critical commission decisions, says Tom Winkler, the division's senior investigator. The public is getting its money's worth, adds Norman Goldstein, chief of the division's complaints and political programming branch. He's always willing to bite the bullet and make a decision. Kelly says that he likes to think of the enforcement division as educators. He recounts efforts to spell out the rules to local stations at state broadcast conventions. Kelly adds that, in the end, the FCC action depends on receiving a complaint. If a violation occurs and no one complains, he says, for our purposes, it never happened. Some of the items we have available from the Publication Center include After Dark Number 7, which is the one we just put out. It has all the digital television information in it and a lot of interesting articles, and we're starting to gear up for After Dark Number 8. So if you have any material that you'd like to contribute to the magazine for After Dark Number 8, please send it to us here at the DX Audio Service at Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio, 45802-5031. If you'd like to purchase After Dark number 7 or After Dark number 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1, as a matter of fact, you can get those from the National Radio Club's Publication Center, and that's located at Post Office Box 164, Mansville, M-A-N-N-S-V-I-L-L-E, New York, 13661 in the United States of America. Well, I guess it's time to wrap this puppy up because I'm off to the convention. Like I said before, we hope to be able to tape a lot of what's going on at the National Radio Club Convention and bring you all those interesting topics that we'll be talking about. Some of the seminars that John Bowker and myself will be doing. We'll be recording both Historical Moments in Radio and the Travelogue Live. And I think we should be able to get some recordings from our banquet and our banquet speakers. So we'll have a lot more for you in the future here from the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. That's all. I don't have anything more, so I'm going to get up and leave. 73, good DX. Get out there and support radio.
It's another day in Boston, and there's so much you can do. We sure would like to tag along and share it all with you. Taking the train to Cambridge, the Charles and Harvard Square, you can almost see the Golden Dome of Promise from out there. And now, Boston, we love you, nothing in ordinary. Colonies, Boston colony, feel the fun. Listen to the Sox, the Boston Fox, walking through the prune. Swan boat rides, old iron sides, hey, look at you. You've had quite a day.